Good afternoon.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good, good.
We've got Rob here. This is Sean, Claudia, and Michael is on the line.
Wonderful. Well, welcome. How was the month?
Last month was our best production month in 18 months.
And we turned the team over by 50%.
And we have positioned this month for, depending upon a capital call and a private equity investment, either August, well, I guess either July or August will be even better than last month.
Wonderful. Well, that's great, because you have had many disruptions. So,
congratulations. It's becoming a little bit of a disruption. I just want to put on your radar screen, not to get your kind of spontaneous reaction, but to just give you something to percolate on a bit here and maybe help us think about it. We're getting increasing questions from our clients about whether or not we're going to stick around Wells Fargo and what the hell is going on here.
Well, I think the politics of the politics of jumping on a person that's down is something we can't deal with and help. There are certain members of our society that will use every opportunity to enhance their careers for all kinds of reasons. And that's going to be part of our lives no matter what. So what happened was something that certainly nobody is particularly proud of, but it certainly wasn't in the order of the Great Recession and the debacles that have been done by other firms. So I would not use that as a reason to disrupt my life any more than it's already disrupted.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're making clear to them that we're not headed anywhere. You know, the one really big advantage that we have is one of the things I said to the client who asked me this yesterday. I said, you know, Barry, I said, I basically said what you said, you know, I'm not, you know, obviously proud of everything that this organization does or that any organization does. And I'm not pleased with where I find us today. I said, but here's what I would say to you is, Wells Fargo's news releases has nothing to do with Sean and I's attitude about where we are and where we do business. We had a very powerful lesson that we learned in 2008. June 13th of 2008, we walked out of Bank of America and came to work for Wachovia Securities. So during that time period, Sean and I got paid by Bank of America, and then we got a check from Wachovia Securities. In the ensuing 3 months, for a short period of time, we worked for Citibank, and then I was flying out to see clients in California, and when I got on the plane, I worked for Citibank, and when I got off the plane, I worked for Wells Fargo. So having worked for one securities firm since I joined the industry in 1992, over the course of about 90 days, I worked for four firms. And the only common denominator I can find in any of those firms was you, our clients. And the reason we left Bank of America was is that we were convinced it was no longer the best place for us to do business for our clients. And if we ever become convinced that Wells Fargo is no longer the best place for us to do business and we can find a better place to do business, you'll hear from us then. But up until then, we're not doing anything.
And that handled it, right?
It did. Yeah. I mean, now where I'm not being able to make that speech, frankly, and I've made it and it's worn off, is the institutional clients who, you know, they're nonprofits, they tend to lean pretty far left. And
they have to answer to another board.
They have to answer to a board who, you know, And you know the problems with boards is everybody wants to look like they're doing something.
Oh, yeah, I know.
What is the least amount of work I can actually do and still look like I'm doing something?
Right. And have an intelligent opinion about something. Right?
Exactly.
I mean,
so. Hey, Rob, let us share with you, and I'm going to let Claudia do this because Claudia gets 100% of the credit for having found Michael Knowles and brought us together with him. And, we haven't completely, spoiled him yet or anything, so I don't want to, get too overly enthusiastic and exuberant here and make him difficult to deal with, and this is only a second week on the job. But I would like, Claudia, if you have a moment, just to give you a quick overview of his background and then also some of the steps that she and Sean took prior to his joining to get him up to speed on Supernova, and then get your thoughts on, and I think he's had a conversation with Cindy,
yep.
And then get your thoughts on anything else that you think we can do to help him really just push us to the next level with this. So can you, Claudia, we may have talked about this, but it's probably worth a recap.
Yeah, and I'll let Michael give you his full background, but let me tell you how he came to us. Actually, Michael, prior to coming with us, immediately was working with the county government, but before that, he was actually a client associate across the street at PCG of Wells Fargo, where my husband is a regional manager, so he knew Michael and Michael's work ethic and always spoke very highly of him. And when we were looking for somebody to fill Tara's role once we found out she was leaving, Michael came to mind, and everything worked out. Actually, Michael was in the process of purchasing a home, which it had just fallen through. He was, his licenses were still intact. He was thinking about coming back into the industry. So everything kind of fell into place. He takes a lot of pride in being an assistant, and I think has learned a lot from his past experience, and we can already see certain level of organization and work ethic from him even in the short 2 weeks that he's been with us. So we are excited to have him. In the 2 weeks that he wasn't here, Sean and I took the time to really clean up some of the operational stuff that had been left behind. There was just a lot of mess in place, so hopefully he's walking into something that's not a complete disaster.
Michael, excuse me. Rob, I'm holding my hand up here. I'm going to interrupt one time. You have my solemn vow that the next time you give me personnel advice, I will follow it, or you have my permission to bill me and not take a single phone call from me.
Well,
yeah.
45 years.
You have no idea how many times I said, oh, my God, I wish I had a list of him a year ago.
In hindsight, we should have made the change a long time ago. But the good news is we had 2 weeks to kind of let everything bubble up to the surface and kind of clean it up and give Michael, I think, a good place to start from. And he already has, a lot of ideas as to help us building efficiencies. He read Supernova. He sat down with Cindy, went over the spreadsheet. So we're excited to have him. But I'll let him give you a quick background on himself.
How are you, sir? Great. Pleasure to meet you over the phone. When I first met with Claudia, she had spoke very highly about the system you put together. I worked at Merrill for a short time, and I've heard about it when I was there. I guess my basic background is I started in the financial services industry as an intern, moved up very quickly to an assistant role, and then out of various times, I was kind of a hybrid assistant FA for when I worked at a bond firm in New York, David Leonard Associates. And then from there, I realized that my strengths weren't necessarily in the FA role; they were more in the assistant role. The basis of my organization, a few things were a lot more suited to the assistant role. And I also learned from working, various different people, different reps, and different organizations that being an assistant wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't the bottom of the rung in terms of a career. It's kind of what you make of it and the team that you can join that makes the difference in terms of that role. And when I learned that, I just did everything I could to kind of hone those skills and help the advisors organize their books as much as I could from that perspective and allowed them to be free to continue to cultivate their clients and grow their practices.
Well, congratulations and welcome aboard. Just a curiosity, what did you learn in county government?
Inefficiencies mostly, but I learned it kind of reinforced just because something's done something, just because something's been done away for decades doesn't necessarily mean it should be done that way. And while it doesn't change overnight, fighting that fight is still an important part. And I think I did a lot in my time there. I was recognized several times in a very short period of time, including within the first 3 months of my working there. So,
Rob, again, I'm going to interrupt Michael just to tell you humbly that he's a little more humble than maybe I am or Sean is, but we actually had to wait a couple days for him to get here because they'd given him an award as one of the top employees, and so he thought it would be rude to leave a day or two before he received his award. So they were very sorry to see him go.
Well, congratulations, and you will find that this is kind of, as you remember, our industry is one that embraces change, looks forward to change, and loves change, because if we don't, we get slaughtered. So your creativity that you're bringing to the business is something that I look forward to embracing and learning from. So we will teach you Supernova, and we will teach you process, plan, process, and rituals. But if you're as creative as it sounds like you are, I want your input, how to make this thing work better, because Supernova is the evolution of great input. It is not the brainchild of one person. It's a process that has developed over time and is sort of the embodiment of efficiency versus inefficiency. So I'm glad to hear you learned a lot in county government, because I learned a lot in the Navy, and I will tell you, there's a lot of things that can be improved, but there's some things they do very well. So congratulations, and glad to see you joining the team. Okay, let's Robert, what would you like to focus on today? In terms of,
so the thing that I had wanted to kind of address and to look at and to get a refresher for us all is, now that we've got a stable structure again, the ability to execute and a good solid team around us, we've gotten really good at, we're back to the morning meetings at 9:30, talking about the day, where we're headed, what's happening, what's going on. We had a really productive meeting earlier this week looking at the forward calendar. We are back to doing the blocking and tackling things, Rob, like sitting down and saying, okay, here's the list of everybody that ought to get into the Carlisle private equity deal. Who do we need to talk to? How do we move this deal down the road? And then regularly looking at that. But I think that we need to now talk about, and Sean's putting back in place the regular meetings and the accountability functionality of it. I'd like him to give you an overview of like where he's at today, and then talk about what are the next kind of big bricks we need to put in place to recreate accountability, tracking, and communication.
That's great. Okay, Sean?
Yeah, so Rob, those meetings start tomorrow, actually. Michael is the first tomorrow afternoon, and then I've positioned these so it more or less, kind of goes up the team rank, and then Claudia is Friday afternoon, and then Rob and I have a off-site for about an hour and a half directly after that. So those monthly reviews are now on the calendars. They are reoccurring items, just like a regular 12-4-2 for a client is. As Rob also said, the daily meetings that have restarted, again, we lost track of that, and I now see why things were slipping through the cracks, because I think those meetings are invaluable. I mean, we've gotten a lot of things done. It has cut down on daily distractions, as you astutely pointed out, of, you know, people coming in, you know, throughout the day. So I think already in just the last couple of weeks, with the transition and the turnover that we've gone through, we've been able to very quickly, I think, put the practice back on the right ship. And I think that will only continue to advance as we have these open and candid conversations starting tomorrow with the monthly meetings.
Great. Great. That's wonderful. So you've got your daily, weekly meetings going on with the team, the accountability meetings having to do with marketing as well as performance. Let's go back and look at planning. Where are you in terms of planning and compared to your goals for the year? Guys, still there?
Yeah. You got it, Rob. I'm telling you, Sean and I, we always pride ourselves on thinking quick on our feet, but we're like, that's right, Tara was vice president of planning.
We're doing really well now.
we're planning to plan.
Yeah.
Well, the answer is obviously nowhere.
Well, I now have my first topic of each of the monthly meetings tomorrow. This is good. We've got, and I think this also feeds into an item, Rob, that we should address in terms of the content of the 12-4-2 reviews. We need to get back on the 24-month calendar. We have more or less adopted what I will call a modified 24-month calendar to fit what we've done within the practice. So, for example, one of the reasons we're going to have a very successful month, either in July or August, is because of the private equity position that we've partnered with the folks at the Carlyle Group. They have come out with the 8th iteration of their real estate fund. And, you know, for one of the months where, you know, we had the insurance and annuity reviews, one of the pieces that was not on there was the alternatives. And our portfolios are very heavily geared towards alternatives. And we had shifted last month's conversation in the 24-month calendar to surround the alternative piece. But I don't think we're doing an adequate job in terms of the monthly calls of making sure that we're addressing all the right topics.
Yeah, and I do believe a big part of that is just organization with everything that we went through in the past month and a half. I mean, call it 2 months. But I think we need to get we've kept the calls going, Rob, but I think the folders have kind of slipped through there, and I think that the folders are key to kind of getting organized with these monthly topics and the 24-month calendar and, you know, making sure we're not missing any follow-up with the clients. So I think that's going to be a goal in terms of implementation for the next 30 days here, is to get that back up and running.
Good. Great. I was going to ask about brand management and Supernova, and so get the folders back on. You know, and one of the things that I had another team that kind of slipped on the folders, and I said, you know, don't slip. I mean, as long as you've got your agenda and you've got your executive summary for each call, then you've got the key elements that are critical to the client.
That has not slipped.
We kept that going for sure.
Great. Okay. Yeah, that's the key element. Internally, that's up to you guys. I think it's great if you can keep the folders going. To me, they're a conscience. You know, they're a little bit of a conscience that sits there, and if you don't execute on them, they slap you right in the face. So it's helpful to me. The other thing, as we switch to marketing, make sure you don't slip on the folders for the clients and for prospects. I just went through this again with this other team. They were failing to, they had two big prospects, and they said, I'm just having trouble getting them over the edge. I said, did you give them their folder? And he right. goes, no, you know, I didn't. I said, you know, give them the folder, show them the difference, and if you have to, use the 90-day free look, which differentiates you dramatically from the competition. Not by what you say. Everybody's spending a lot of time right now on what's my value proposition. Well, your value proposition is it's wonderful when you articulate it beautifully. But what's more important is what's your real value? What are you actually doing and demonstrating? You know, my dad used to say, it's not what you say, it's what you do that counts. And so by giving them the 90-day free look, you're demonstrating what you're going to do. And it's not going to be now you're a, once you're a client, you know, you're, we were very attentive when you were a prospect, but now you're a client, forget it, we're never going to call you. And that's the, that's a big, huge lever to pull when you're marketing yourselves. So the credibility of doing it consistently, using the folders, and staying with the program is so important for the integrity of what you're selling, as well as for the fact that you're going to keep your clients and make them very happy. So,
yeah, I think that's a really good point, Robin. That's, you know, something that we just talked to a prospect this morning, and he was more of a planning kind of experience. And we are going to get together and have a meeting with he and his partners to talk about what we can do with planning. But I think that just gave me a great idea to say to these guys, listen, we want to talk about our planning capabilities and Wells planning in those areas, but let's take a step back and talk about what does relationship with us look like? Why is it that clients do business with us to begin with? And what do our clients tell us is the most important aspect of our relationship with them?
Right.
And
why?
Clearly, it's communication.
Yeah, and why? And you know, Rob, when you do these monthly calls and you do them for 6 months and a year, I mean, your relationship is so different with the client. It is so much deeper and better.
Yeah, and, you know, and the other thing is that shocks me is Sean and I just today had a call with one of our clients who we were talking about telecom, and he says, well, that reminds me of when I was on the board of directors of Nortel. And I thought, I never knew this. I've known this guy for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I never knew he was on the board of directors at Nortel. Yeah.
Cisco is one of our biggest competitors. This is interesting. We should take a look at that stock. Like,
it's just the more you talk, you know, you just, you learn something every day you talk to these clients.
Right. All right. So are we ready for a new idea?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, all right, so not everybody is in this situation, but I would say the majority of your clients are in a situation that's similar to mine. And I was thinking about what I would like as a client. All right, because I pretty much get whatever I want, you know. I'm very spoiled, and I can, you know, and I teach and I coach and I – if I don't get it, I'll demand it and get it. So I don't. There isn't much that I don't get and that I feel like I need. But I was thinking about this, and I hadn't had a financial plan done in quite a while. And I was thinking, I don't want just a regular financial plan. What I'm 71 now. My wife is 69. She'll be 70. My son is 39, my daughter's 41. We have a granddaughter that's 3. Fast forward 20 years, I'm 91, Marcia's 89. My daughter will be 61.
Hey, Rob.
My granddaughter will be 23. Okay? Now, what do I care about? I care what if my daughter is frankly going to be able to retire, and what will her lifestyle look like in retirement at 61? Okay? And I explained this to Cindy, and she said, Rob, but there's so many things that could happen, you'd have no idea. I said, yeah, but you got to remember, the probabilities are that things will continue to be similar to what they've been in the past. And the plans I made at 41 and the plans I made at 51 and 61 pretty much came close to being true. All right? So I've done most of the financial planning. I've got a GRAT, I've got a CRUT, I've got a Dynasty Trust, I've got a family foundation. So I've got most everything, but I don't have a sense of what the future will look like having done those things at that moment. And wouldn't that be interesting? Because that's either both of us are going to be dead at that point. So you got one scenario. Marcia and I are both gone, or we're both alive. So run me that scenario. Having done the financial planning that I've done, where will my assets be? How much will my children have? And what would their lifestyle look like based on their retirement? Now, that nobody does, okay? I guarantee you.
No, you're exactly right.
Okay? So we're all just doing our clients, you know, can you retire? Well, these people can all retire. Of course they can.
Right.
They're all going to have more money than they know what to do with. What do they care about? They care about their granddaughter.
Right.
And what is her life going to be like? And what can we do? Have we done everything that we possibly could to keep money out of the hands of the government, into the hands of my children, but not so as to spoil them?
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me about this is, Rob, this is really very so timely. Because we've got a client who's worth probably $35 million today. He doesn't spend at a crazy rate. He's not hit 60 yet. So he's going to rack up $50, $60, $70 million. So if you tell him, if you don't do anything to your estate, the kids are going to pay $25 million in taxes, and the kids are going to get $25 million, he says, I don't care. Big deal. Now, his wife does care. But what we've never done is taken that from this theoretically huge number and illustrated the consequences of those decisions. So what you just did for me is you just made a light bulb go off, because I always say to clients that you only can ever properly understand risk in the context of the consequences of suffering that risk. So when we told clients in 2008 that their S&P portfolio had a standard deviation of 19 and a mean rate of return of 9, they said, yeah, okay, so I got a standard deviation risk of 19, big deal. Well, what that meant is that you could lose 40% of your money, and that was 95% probable based upon any kind of simple mathematical equation. Now, down 40% in September and March of 2009, you understand risk now. What you've done is you've said, let's contextualize this and say, okay, Tom, you've got three kids. They're going to get married. You've had three kids. Let's say they have the 2.5 kids. Now we've got seven kids that we need to educate. We're going to retire these kids. We're going to educate these kids and everything else. Does $25 million in today's dollars, which seems like an extraordinary amount of money, really do that?
Expensive burden.
And see how much of it does. So as I said, you just took away that I explained market vol risk and said, you've got to do that with planning as well.
And the other spectrum of that, Rob, is Brian Nolan's getting ready to buy a $1.2 million house, and he's 29 years old.
Yeah.
His dad's already planned for him to inherit a pile of money, which he has no idea about.
Right.
What is his life going to look like?
Well, and to the point, if his son is as successful, anywhere near as successful as George was, it may not make sense to land a half of George's estate on the next generation.
Exactly. Right. And maybe that is skipping.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And Jennifer as well. The same.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I've got to tell you, if you ask our clients to a person, and this goes back to the nature of our client base, they're all self-made. So
Right. The
biggest concern that I hear them all express is, I don't want to, quote, screw my kids up.
Right.
I don't want to take away their motivations. I don't want to make them lazy. I don't want to this. I don't want to that. And so I think that starting to get to, you know, what do these numbers look like? I mean, because let's face it, if I had ever told my father, who's 86 now, if I had ever told him when I was graduating from high school in 1978 that I think that for me to live the life that I want to live and do what I want to do, I'm going to need X dollars, and my house in Alexandria, Virginia is going to cost me $1.9 million, he'd have slapped me up the side of my head.
No.
He said, wait, are you out of your mind? The house you're living in, boy, costs $32,000. I'm working at Sears Roebuck making $10,000 and sending you to – I mean, it's just you just can't possibly understand that.
No.
So
here's the point. I think the point is this. We don't know what that discussion is going to look like, okay?
Right.
Because we've not had it. I mean, I can't tell you what I'm going to discover by doing this. But my sense is the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get the math done. I'm going to look at it. Then I'm going to decide whether or not I'm going to include my children in this discussion. If I do, I think it would give them – at this stage, they're both working their butt off. They're terrific kids, you know. They're not a worry from the point of view of being lazy. But they both have big anxiety, okay? And if you could relieve some of that anxiety by showing them the future, I think that might make their lives better. Now, I may not do it. I'm going to have to decide that. The other question is, you know, if there's going to be this enormous excess capital, maybe I put it into the foundation, which gives them the ability to gain an income from it and make an impact on society. But that I don't know until I do this planning, you see?
Right.
And
it also then, Rob, gives you some future decision trees to be watching for. Because you may say, at my current net worth, that doesn't make sense. But if I accumulate another 25 or 30%, then it does make sense to start to peel this off. So it kind of gives us next decision tree points.
Right. And you are so much
making decisions again.
Your client is so much smarter then. And you are so much smarter. And you've got so much more to talk about. Because I guarantee you, all your clients haven't done those three things that I did, which was a grant, a CRUT, and a family foundation, four, and a dynasty trust, okay? Put those into the equation and show what that would do for them, putting their real estate into a trust, peeling off some money and putting it into a trust, taking some money, peeling it, putting it into a foundation, and then buying a second-to-die life insurance policy inside a dynasty trust and see what that does, which feeds into the family foundation. So these are a lot of business ideas. Yeah, they're good business ideas for you, but they're great planning ideas for the client. And then just compare that to doing nothing.
What is the scenario where you get the children involved so that they understand that you're doing this for their best interest so that these assets stay in-house when something inevitably happens to the clients themselves?
That's right. I don't know what the impact would be in their brain. I can only project what it would mean to me if I were in their situation. So I guess they know what we've done in terms of the grant and the CRUT. They know what I've done with the Dynasty Trust and the Family Foundation. That's been very meaningful. The Family Foundation has been the best thing I've done in terms of keeping the family together, in terms of having a family purpose and having a regular annual meeting and turning our family into a bit of a business. That's been very important. It isn't like I've kept things from them, but I haven't projected out. First of all, my daughter gets upset anytime I mention dying. So I have to couch it, you know. One minute I'm here and one minute I'm not. All right. So it's kind of like do one with me and one without me. And she'll say, I only want the one with you.
Do you, when you speak to your children, and I apologize if I'm getting too personal, but when you speak to your children, do you impart on them how important the setup is or the people that did it for you?
The setup.
That ultimately helped you create these things, to create the legacy.
For them, look, there's two things. There's the trust that has happened because they get their regular annual review with their financial advisor, who is my financial advisor. That's why I tell you that to do these, do a 4-1 with the children. One in person, three other quarterly calls with updates on their financial future. Because then you become their financial advisor. If you don't do that, then it's dad's financial advisor. And when it's time for making their own decisions, per se, this money, they will choose their own person. So this is critical.
Would they be considered the butler accounts?
They are butlers. That's correct. But remember, the butlers still get one in-person meeting. And that's very important.
I mean, Rob, this really does open up a great avenue for us because the one client that we've mentioned here a couple times, George, Claudia, and Sean, I guess Sean on this one, handles both of the kids' accounts. Another client, Barry, who's just sent us all of his trust docs and everything and asked us to help him think through how he does things. He's got a couple of grandchildren now. Claudia and Sean do his daughter's trust or do their investments. And so this is just such a natural thing for us to be doing. And if I could, let me share one really super quick story, and I'll tell it in a very abbreviated way. With all due respect to current clients or any future clients, my favorite client in the world will always be a guy by the name of Nick Esty. His real name was Kelton Clark Esty, so Sean would have liked him because he's a good Irish lad. But he started pumping gas for Mobil out in Oregon when he was in college in the 1940s, maybe the 50s. Fast forward 40 years later, I meet him. He's the number three guy at ExxonMobil, and obviously he's accumulated a lot of dough. We have a meeting with him and his boys. He tells me that I need to go up to his house. He still has a house up in Danbury, Connecticut. And his two boys are going to meet us up there. We're going to have a family meeting one Saturday afternoon. And I'm new in the business. I don't know nothing about nothing. I've only, been in the business 6-7 years. So Nick gets the boys together and he says, boys, I want to have a conversation with you about our family and about the family's assets and our business and so on and so forth. And he says, basically, here was his punchline. Over the course of the years, everybody in the family made a lot of sacrifices. He worked a lot. He traveled a lot. His wife, Donna, raised the boys, spent too much time alone with them. They didn't have him at the Little League games. He missed concerts. He missed this. Everybody sacrificed along the way. But because we did that and we all worked hard, we've been successful. What does success mean? Well, here's what it means to you boys. Two of the biggest rocks that I had to push up a hill was I had to make sure that your mother and I had enough money to retire and enjoy the lifestyle that we wanted to enjoy, and I had to make sure that I had the money to educate you boys. Those were my two biggest challenges, and they were the two things that really meant I had to kind of run an overdrive. You boys don't have to worry about either one of those things. Your children will be educated. You will have a comfortable retirement. I tell you that because I want you two to know this. You can do anything that you want to do. Follow your passion. Follow your dream. Do what excites you to get up every morning and get up. Now, you can't not do anything. You don't have enough money to do nothing, but you have enough money to do anything you want to do. And that always struck me as a really powerful meeting and a really powerful conversation that Nick had with his boys, and it went on and materially changed these boys' lives, what they did and how they did everything. And the punchline to all this is that it was remarkable that he did that, because Nick was dead 2 years later, and 7 years later, his eldest son was dead. So two boys, in the 7 or 8 years after that meeting with their dad, they both quit their corporate jobs, went to work together, started their own business together, were highly successful, moved closer to each other, decided they wanted to live in Park City and get involved in their kids' lives and all these other things. And so when when Greg died, Brad was there. Brad's family was there. I mean, you couldn't have planned. I mean, as much as it's a tragedy, you couldn't have planned for a tragedy to have a better support system around it. And it's all because Nick had that meeting 9 years previously.
Wow. Well, see, guys, I mean, look, this, you get it. You get it. This is why we're in business. All right? We're not in business. The benefits, the financial benefits of what we do is wonderful. Why we're in business is to do this.
Right.
Is to help people make their lives better. I tell people our job is to help our clients grow up and make better decisions.
Yep.
And in truth, that's what we do. We have them face the realities of their demise, face the realities of disability, face the realities of change, but at the same time, plan on the best. You know, plan on the best. Plan on your kids turning out great. Plan on, but be prepared for other things to happen because they can happen. As a Navy pilot, I never went up feeling like I was going to crash. I always went up optimistic it was going to be a blast and a great day, but knowing that things, bad things can happen, so I was always prepared. So be prepared, but be optimistic. And so that's the way I think you do your financial planning. Be optimistic that your kids will understand and will grow from this. I mean, people are so afraid to tell their kids anything that they don't tell them anything, and the kids grow up in this wilderness of uncertainty.
Right.
And so I think it's a great example of how you do things and sharing. So, you know, I always told the kids they'd get nothing when they were growing up. You know, it's all going to the foundation, so work your ass off.
Right, exactly.
And you know, and then so I lied a little.
It was the truth that you then understood the truth.
Right. All right, so you've got the right minds to do this. Take this idea and go and do it. And this is not, quote, financial planning. This is life, multi-generational life planning. Take this idea and try it and come back and tell me how it worked. Because I think this is the reason, this is the person that these clients are looking for as a financial advisor. All right?
Right.
This is what they're really interested in. Because what do they care most about? They care most about their children and their grandchildren and the legacy and how that's going to affect them and all that. And this is where, this is the heart of what you're doing when you do this kind of planning. So have fun with that. I think it's a fun idea. I was excited. I'm glad you're already doing it, but take it to the next level.
Yeah, formalize
deep relationships.
Yeah. Formalize it and make it part of the process.
Yes, and talk about it. Talk about Nick and his speech. You know, make that part of your planning process. You know, talk about what this will mean. You know, let's do a real life plan. Not, you know, can I make it to retirement and pay for my kids' education? That's so ridiculously simple. This is much more into what is really important to them. Because everybody wants to plan. Even when you're 71, you want to plan for 20 years.
Right.
You know? And so this gives you a raison d'etre, a reason to get up and a reason to do things. And So it's a motivator. It's a great, you know, to me, it'd be fun to do this and see what it would be like and see how close I can get to these numbers.
Right.
So, anyway.
Well, thank you for that, sir. We've got a stern taskmaster who makes sure we talk to our clients every single month. So we got a 1242 call roll up here pretty quick, don't we, Sean?
Yep.
Roger. All right. Glad to see you. We're back on track. Michael, welcome aboard. You're going to have a blast. This is a great, great team, and I look forward to talking to you next month.
All right. Thanks for your time, Rob. Have a good week. Actually, have a nice 4th of July.
That's right.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hey, and thanks for flying those planes around so we can all go eat hot dogs and have fireworks and have all these knuckleheads up here running around crazy in Washington, D.C. Do you ever look at the news at night like some of my other buddies did that did time in the military and said, I risked my life for this?
They were there then, too, you know.
I have a buddy who did 15 years as a Navy SEAL, and he was at my house the other night, and the TV was on. He looked up, he says, you know, sometimes I really question the 15 years I spent sleeping in caves and wandering through swamps.
But no, it's crazy. It was fun. I don't regret a minute.
All right, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.